Well, would you sell your soul for three wishes? Think about that. That might be a pretty interesting open line tomorrow night. Well, of his 20 years as an Army intelligence officer, Paul Smith spent 7 years as a remote viewer for the military Stargate remote viewing program. He is personally trained and controlled remote viewing by the creators of remote viewing, Ingo Swann and Hal Puthoff. And he was the primary author of the program's RV training manual, trained other well-known viewers such as Lynn Buchanan and David Morehouse. Paul now teaches remote viewing commercially. Paul's book, Reading the Enemy's Mind, was chosen as a book bonus feature and editor's choice by Reader's Digest. In a moment, Paul Smith joins Bill Burns and I on Coast to Coast AM. Paul Smith, as I mentioned, along with Bill Burns. Bill, how did you and Paul get together?
I first heard about Paul Smith. We all have the same editor at Torforge. And I had first heard of Paul's book from our editor talking about remote viewing when he said, listen, you guys are writing Worker in the Light, and I think you should take a look at the galleys for Reading the Enemy's Mind. And I did, and I was blown away. Here, in black and white, was actually a personal story at the foundation of the remote viewing program. Paul was there at the beginning and talking about the various aspects of the program, which really kind of plugged in and confirmed what Ingo Swann had written about in his book Penetration in many ways. And I called up Paul, asked him if what Ingo Swann wrote was true. He said from what he knew, some of the things were true, and Paul can talk to that. And we interviewed him very quickly for UFO Magazine about his experiences. And then Paul drops this amazing bomb, which I'd love to get into, and that is he perceived an event that took place 48 hours before it took place. So he perceived it 48 hours later. The news came of the event, and the event happened 48 hours after he perceived it. And we wrote about that. That was the attack on the USS Stark in the Persian Gulf.
Uh-huh.
And there were other things. So that, to me, if one person can travel in time, official United States Army officer traveling in time, if one person can do it, we all can do it. And that's what started us on the road.
Well, and here he is now, former Army intelligence officer Paul Smith. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Good to have you back on Coast to Coast.
Oh, I'm always excited to be here with you.
You know, when you perceived the attack on the Stark, did you know what it was and where it was going to occur?
Well, apparently I must have known something about it. But in advance, no. I had no idea that there was an event coming. I had no idea what I was going to remote view when I sat down to do that session. Had no clue or expectation about it whatsoever. And that's just what unfolded. And of course, until after it actually happened, I had no idea what I had done.
Without the training, would this have occurred? Would you have been able to have done this?
It would have been much less likely. Obviously, there are people who have spontaneous ESP-type experiences, but they're very rare in people's lives, usually, and they usually involve a crisis situation with a loved one or a family member. They can happen spontaneously. They can happen unexpectedly to someone who had no inkling of being psychic in any sense of the word before. But the fact that I had been trained by Ingo Swann and Hal Puthoff and their group made such an event as this much more likely to take place. That is the remote viewing of another event like this.
And when you say trained, how did Ingo Swann and Hal Puthoff, how did they train you?
Well, it was very brutal. Well, Ingo has a style of training where he brooks no nonsense. They worked together before they presented this training program to the U.S. military. The military actually wanted some way of turning generally ordinary soldiers into remote viewers.
And they wanted to crank them out too, didn't they?
Well, they wanted to at least be able to. At that time, there's a lot of resistance from other, further up the chain of command, and so they they wanted to be able to do that in case they got more of a green light from the rest of the military than they had at the time. So they wanted at least to have that ability. And they proposed the SRI, and the Stanford Research Institute, where Ingo and Hal were. And so that put these folks to work. They'd already been trying to figure out how the whole thing worked, what was behind it, the, whatever mechanism might be involved. And then they focused on training, how to make more people like the viewers at SRI were. And then, by and large, they were successful in coming up with a training method that achieved that. But Ingo was very insistent that you followed the specific principles. He was an entertaining guy to be around, but he was also very much a, you might almost call him a psychic drill master, a drill sergeant.
We've been trying to get him back on the program. He had been ill about a year ago, and he's weighing whether he can stay up late or not. Bill, did you ever know or meet Ingo Swann?
Yes, I did. After the day after Roswell came out, Ingo Ingo called me. I think it was back in late 1997, and just out of the clear blue sky, and I knew who he was, obviously, and I'd seen his book, and he called me to say, I want to tell you that everything that Corso said about the moon, specifically this whole Project Horizon business in the back of day after Roswell, because we believe that somebody had been on the moon before. And Ingo said, listen, I want to tell you that what he said about the moon and structures on the moon and what he believed about the moon, it's absolutely true. And he went into the story of how he was doing a remote viewing exercise and saw himself on the moon, and on the moon he saw this kind of like factory-like structure, and in the factory, and this is in Paul's, I think it's in Paul's book too, in the factory there were these life forms, and they were preparing something on an assembly line, and he said that what happened is they looked up at him, and he saw them see him, and he headed for the hills. And so he told me that story and said, I'm telling you the story not to pump myself up, but I'm telling it to you specifically because I want you to know that Phil Corso was right about the moon. And click, click, thank you, Ingo, and that was it, and I spoke to him about that.
Paul, I'd like you to meet Bill Burns, by the way.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
You know, the irony is...
I'll talk to you again after all these hours.
Yeah, we have... I'm sorry, say that again?
No, I'm saying good to talk to you.
Oh, yes, yeah. The funny thing is, I feel like I've known him for years, and yet we've yet to meet face to face. That's really kind of amusing here, I think.
Well, then, Paul, you and I have met a couple times in Austin, Texas, and it's a delight every time I'm there with the TalkFest and our station KLBJ to run into you.
Yeah, well, it is really great to see someone of such accomplishment in person, I guess I could say.
Even though I kind of figured you were there, even if you might have been at home, you would have remote viewed me.
Oh, of course, yes. You couldn't keep me away. You know?
Paul, in your opinion, have we truly stopped remote viewing in terms of as a government form of surveillance?
Well, you know, of course, I'm in a graduate philosophy program, so anytime you ask a philosopher a question like that, he wants to know what you mean by we.
Yeah, that's true. We as Americans,
I guess. Statement. As U.S. government stopped, I really think it has. People don't really, they can't fathom that answer, because although it didn't work all the time, remote viewing was successful often enough when it was done right, that you would think they would want to keep it around for those situations where nothing else was working. But all the evidence I've seen suggests they did cancel it. And, of course, part of that has to do with the mindset of some of the people involved. Just like in the open society, there are skeptics in the military overall. There were skeptics there, too, and they tend to have been farther up the chain of command, the decision-making positions, all that, who got to decide whether we did these kinds of things or not. And the program itself was terminated by a director of Central Intelligence who had a reputation for not tolerating any mention of remote viewing in his presence. He just didn't have any time at all for remote viewing. He didn't believe in it, and he didn't want anything to do with it. And consequently, when it turned out he was inheriting the program, it didn't go anywhere. They canceled it.
What did you think? Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask Paul. There are three acquaintances that basically talk to that very same issue. One of whom you know, and George knows, and has been on the show, is Bill Scott. Bill Scott says that in the black world, in the world of black ops, that there's always this principle called the seventh shack principle, which is once people know about something, and it can be kind of disinformed in a certain way, then it moves to a further level of secrecy, where other people can work on it, or where a group can kind of work on it. And Bill had said to me that he believed that the whole remote viewing program went to another level of the black world, where he said budgets are simply out of control, and there is no kind of public oversight of those funds. Then the other person was, of course, Corso, who said that what goes on in Army budgeting inside the Pentagon, it's like dogs fighting over scraps of food. You've got the various, not just the different services, but the different divisions, branches within the services, fighting over a public budget and really tearing each other apart over every single dollar they can get for their programs. And so you've got these two things going on. So I'm just wondering if, sure, the director of the CIA, who obviously saw something there and said we could use this money better elsewhere, but also might have thought there's a deeper secret here, and if we go too much farther, we're going to stumble upon a secret that we want to know about, and which was basically that all human beings have this ability, and maybe that's something the government, doesn't want us to know about.
Well, I'm afraid you might be giving that gentleman a bit too much credit. I think that there are some who would think along those lines, but in this particular case, I don't think that was what happened. The money thing, certainly, yeah. Here's a pot of money, and at the time, admittedly, the intel community, as well as the military at large, was in a drawdown phase. This was supposedly we'd won the Cold War, and so now we're going to reap the peace dividend, right? And so the Congress, Republican Congress, and the Clinton administration were competing to see who could cut the most out of the budget, out of the military budget. And so any little pot of gold there that could be used for some other more high priority project was going to get siphoned off if they could even manage it. And so I think that was one of the motivations for doing the program. Now, I'm not going to say that it's absolutely impossible that remote viewing isn't being done, even maybe on a formal basis, somewhere in the U.S. government. That is always possible. You couldn't prove it if it was, you know, in any case, you couldn't prove the negative there. But I usually just give people percentages. I'd say there's a 90% chance that it's pretty much dead as a activity being done within the government in any kind of an official capacity, which leaves a 10% chance that it might be.
What about outsourcing?
Well, that I think can happen. There's been lots of claims about it, some of which have been proved not to be true. You know, people claim, well, I was working for the government, I was doing stuff, you know, as a contractor, whatever. Some of those instances have been shown to be just tall tales. Other instances are a little bit more plausible, and beyond that, I really can't go.
Paul, why aren't we as remote viewers? Why aren't we just getting together to try to find Osama bin Laden, or to try to find, for example, the Holloway girl who has been gone for such a long time? Ed Dames claims that she's in a lobster cage dumped in the ocean dead.
He's got such an imagination. He comes up with some really great. Well, I mean, and that's possible. Who knows, you know?
But why don't we find bin Laden as a group?
Well, group. Well, that would imply everybody can get together, and in any frontier field, you tend to have squabbling, and then it's hard for people to get together. But first of all, anytime anybody asks a question similar to that, I always want to say, well, what makes you think a remote viewer hasn't found him?
Well, I can't say that they haven't, honestly. But
and there's two possibilities there. He's found him, and the remote viewers found him, and the government knows about it and doesn't want to pick him up now, or can't get to him, or
they
did. Viewers found him, but the government won't believe him.
Or, no, add a third ingredient. Uh-huh. We did get him, and we never told him.
Oh, well, that's also the third possibility, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
What do you think, Bill?
I think that yes, we probably know the vague area where he is, and I think, look, the last time we tried to get him, remember in the Clinton administration where, I think Hillary mentioned this, Senator Clinton, where they launched 5 cruise missiles at a place where they thought he was, and they blew everything up but bin Laden. Yeah. So, and this was back in the 90s. I tend to think that Paul is right on that issue of, we probably know kind of the general area where he is. I think it's next to impossible to get to this guy. I think that somebody said, you know, the way to do it is to just nuke the whole area, and that's the end of that, and we're probably not going to do that. So that's really what I think. And I think there are probably special forces operation teams on their way to get him, and it's really a matter of how to get him in the area, how to get him out alive, and not to do a suicide mission.
Well, maybe we should have nuked Tora Bora in Afghanistan and just obliterated that whole mountain. Maybe we would have.
That was an issue. I think that was an issue. And I think somewhere in the administration, somebody really made a decision about what to do about Tora Bora. Do we actually go in there with a nuke and blow the top off the mountain? And we decided not to.
Can you see the headlines? U.S. nukes Afghanistan.
There you go. That's the headline.
And, of course, you would afterwards have no evidence that you actually got him.
You would have no evidence at all. There'd be nothing there. Paul, reading the enemy's mind, of course, the former Soviet Union is now gone. Of course, we do have Russia doing what they used to do, seems to be. Do you believe the Russians are continuing a remote viewing program?
Well, that's a tougher question. A year or so ago, I would have said absolutely not. And the reason being, they're even more cash-strapped than we are in their military and intelligence industries or communities, and have been for some time. But at the current stage, I have no evidence that they are, but they do seem to be raising the prominence of the defense military kinds of activities more than they used to be. So it's possible that they might be playing with it a little bit.
What about the Chinese? Oh, man, that's fine. Bill, you and I just asked the same thing.
The Chinese, really? Paul, what about the Chinese?
I think there's probably more indication they might be. I know the Stargate, the CIA's Stargate archive, that's 90,000 pages of formerly secret documents they've released, has a huge compendium of stuff on Qigong and other sorts of things that the Chinese are interested in pursuing, and it indicates that there's an interest there. Of course, when you're talking Marxism, I don't know if we can talk about the communist China as Marxist, but nonetheless, it's a materialist sort of philosophy that governs that whole society. It's a little bit harder to research this stuff from a serious perspective because it seems to go outside the material world. We don't have a physical explanation for it, and consequently, any philosophy that's based on materialism is going to have a really hard time dealing with it. So,
except for the fact that there was a book written by these two Chinese colonels, I want to say probably more than 5 years ago, called Ultimate Warfare, that the CIA got a hold of, translated it, printed it, published it, and it's been kind of circulating sub rosa on the internet. We publish it in the filament now, but the book was called Ultimate Warfare, and it basically talks about using asymmetric warfare, i.e. remote viewing, along with cyber warfare and economic warfare against the United States, because these two colonels are actually saying in print that China is at war with the United States, only it's not a traditional conventional war.
Well, they're sending a whole bunch of junk in our food and everything else. Stay with us, Bill Burns, Paul Smith. Let's get into the story of Ingo Swann and get Paul's reaction to what Ingo saw on the moon. Well, next hour, psychic Uri Geller joins us. But in a moment, we'll be back with more with remote viewer Paul Smith on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Bill Burns and Paul Smith. Bill, let's get into with Paul his thoughts on Ingo Swann. And, you know, Ingo trained him. I'm sure he respects him. Ingo came up with incredible things about penetration. Bill, again, though, tell us about what Ingo saw on the moon.
When Ingo called me, he he explained, he said that when he remote viewed the moon, and he didn't say why he went to the moon, but when he remote viewed the moon, he saw a factory building, like an assembly line. And in this factory building, he saw creatures, entities, life forms, working on an assembly line. And that's what he saw, and he stared at that. He was perceiving that. That was his impression. And one of them looked up at him in the way that a predator looks at prey. And when he saw that creature looking at him, knowing that somehow, and I think, Paul, we discussed this too at one point, he disturbed the force. He disturbed some kind of a universal force in the universe. He disturbed that force. He was noticed, and that's when Ingo said he broke the connection and fled. And who did he flee to? Dr. Shafika. And it was gathering vegetables for a dinner with Shafika in a supermarket in Hollywood when he saw an alien walking through the aisles who also looked at him. And that's when he wound up, he said, after talking to Shafika, in an underground location with this person, Axelrod, with these two twins who showed him, he believed they were aliens, who showed him the UFO and took him to Alaska, where a UFO appeared, manifested itself, and fired on him in the Alaskan wilderness. And that was the story, he said. What do you think, Paul?
You know, I don't know what to think. I've talked to Lingo about this, and if I'd known we were going to go in this direction, I would have gone back and reviewed that. But my notes.
But he hasn't backed down, has he, Paul?
No, he's pretty convinced that happened. And the thing, Hal Putoff and I have talked about this too. Ingo didn't talk to anybody at the time it happened. He related the story somewhat later. And Hal says, and I feel exactly the same way, Ingo has been right about everything else. Ingo, first of all, he's never tried to deceive anybody. He's always told the truth as he saw it and has been reliable, very reliable in the past. And so it's very hard to dismiss these stories that he tells as anything else but his actual experiences. And they're very, very sensational, to say the least. And, you know, it's hard to say. You know, I maybe seeing someone in a supermarket, and you can have a case of mistaken identity, but seeing a spaceship flying around zapping things in the North Woods, that's really hard to have a mistaken identity kind of experience with.
Paul, have you remote viewed the moon? Did you see anything there?
Yes. Now, as both of you know, I'm very cautious about forming conclusions on this kind of stuff. But so I just say exactly what I know I can say to be true, and that is that when given coordinates to remote view on the moon, I encountered in my remote viewing session things that I would classify far beyond odd. In other words, intelligent entities, structural features. When I say structural, I don't just mean geological, but in fact some kind of artificial structural features, conveyances, things like that, when I was given these coordinates. Now,
who gave you the coordinates?
Ingo.
Okay. He wanted backup, didn't he?
I'm sorry?
He wanted backup. He wanted someone to confirm what maybe he saw.
Well, frankly, I didn't know that may be what he was after, because this was before penetration. This is before I'd heard any of these stories.
Okay, so you didn't know that he had even done this. Okay.
Yeah.
Bill, this is getting fascinating.
This is better than better. Go ahead, Paul.
Anyway, the one thing is I knew they weren't Earth coordinates when they were given to me. He did not specify that we were doing lunar coordinates, but I knew they weren't Earth coordinates because the coordinate system is a little bit different on the moon. But I didn't know where they were. I kind of suspect it might be lunar. But I didn't, because I am somewhat skeptical as far as most UFO-type claims, I was not expecting to get anything out of the ordinary other than a lot of dirt and dust and stuff. But I did get this material, and it's always possible there's telepathic overlay, or it's always possible somehow my imagination built it in. But what became interesting was later on when I saw some of the other results, And there was correspondence between a couple of other sessions, one of which was Ingo's, and I had not had any contact with one of the other viewers at all. I didn't even know who the person was, still don't know the person. And yet that person's data and mine showed some real interesting correlations. And they were in things, and right now I can't tell you off the top of my head what they were, but they were in ways that you would not see accidentally, or it would be very unlikely that we would have gotten similar things accidentally. So anytime you see correlation like that, that tends to help corroborate your own work. Although it's not a guarantee, it certainly shows that you may be onto something in what you produce.
Bill Burns, how would we know, Bill, if what Paul saw or Ingo was truly extraterrestrial or from this planet maybe sent a million years ago?
Well, that's the point. I mean, that was, again, we're thinking along the same lines. We don't know these are ETs. I mean, Paul, I mean, depending on what you saw, it could have been anything. I'm asking, not saying, but you're right, George. I mean, when NASA did its study of 500 years on the moon, and this is, anybody can get the study. This is one of the great archives of kind of like quasi UFO research done by NASA over the years. They did a study of 500 years. It's on their website. Go download it, read it for yourself. They reported phenomena going all the way back to Elizabethan England, where people were seeing lights flying around the moon, and in the 1940s, construction on the moon, bridges on the moon, and this is also what Ingo was talking about. And so it could be that if Zechariah Sitchin is correct at speculating, mm-hmm. that indeed planet Earth was impacted severely thousands and thousands of years ago, or if Velikovsky was right, that a civilization which left this planet found a home on the moon and evolved separately, and they're there today, and that may be one of the reasons there are these kind of, I'm calling them maybe apocryphal, I don't know, NASA transmissions, which say that the astronauts saw structures on the moon. Maybe that's what Ingo saw. Paul's telling us he saw that. Paul, did they look extraterrestrial? How could you tell?
Well, first off, if they're on the moon, they're extraterrestrial just by definition.
Good.
I hate to put you on a witness stand, Paul.
Speculation. One has to wonder why someone would leave the Earth and go to the moon to live.
Unless you had to.
There's no trout fishing on the moon.
But if Velikovsky's right, there's a source of heat beneath the moon.
Uh-huh. Well, and that could be. I'm sorry, I got off on something else. I forgot your first question.
Well, and again, you gave us your definition, Paul, of extraterrestrial, but I think where Bill and I are headed here is, could these have been, sent from the planet Earth?
Well, of course, assuming something is there, it's not without outside the realm of possibility that it got there from here. And, of course, there's a further question begged here. How do we know we're not actually extraterrestrial?
Well, I think we might be.
That's exactly what George Hoover of the Navy said about the big secret that the military wanted to keep. Now, I don't know if this ever reached you through the rumor mill, but George Hoover was the person who took the notes in the Morris K. Jessup book, The Truth About UFOs, or UFOs Are Real, and he wrote that George Hoover said that was the secret. He was the Corso of the Navy, and he said that was the big secret that the military was trying to keep, that whatever the extraterrestrials are, we are they are us, and the word extraterrestrial has a very, very heavy meaning, because there's no such thing really as an extraterrestrial, although there's no such thing as a terrestrial. So he said that was kind of what was going on.
It's like there's no such thing as an American.
Exactly.
As an original American, let's put it that way. Everybody who's here came here from somewhere else.
Right, that's kind of what he was saying, and that, that the panspermia theory of Crick was correct.
And again, there's no way of parsing, at least we have no way of establishing evidence of that right now. Maybe someday we'll figure that out, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
Well, what did the entities look like? Well, Did you see entities on the moon when you perceived them?
Yeah, and again, I would have gone back and reviewed my material, but I don't recall that I actually, I had the sense that there were entities there, but I don't recall ever getting anything descriptive of them. There was clearly some kind of intelligence at work there, and it wasn't just from the artifacts. Like, I had the feeling of actual intelligent entities of some sort, but again, I didn't get any description that I recall of any of them.
When you passed this on to Ingo Swann, did you look at his eyes, Paul? I mean, did they just open up?
Well, actually, it was mostly done by mail and telephone. I didn't actually... During this entire period, I didn't know what I wasn't in person with him during that
time. Okay.
It was only later, before and after, that I was with him, and so I can't tell you what his reaction was. But he's very circumspect, and he's very good at playing his cards close to his chest. So when I talked to him on the phone, I sent him the stuff, and I would call him a bit later and say, "Well, did you get that material?" He said, "Oh yes, thank you." And I'd say, "Well, can you give me any idea about whether I was on or not?" And he'd say, "Not right now. Maybe later."
And he never did?
Oh, yeah. Eventually, I saw his final report. He actually, I think I have a copy around here somewhere.
What did he say? What did he say?
Well, he was, he didn't say anything concrete. He was just very pleased with it. And he said, "You know, basically everything that that was important for me to know was in the material that he sent me." So I think ultimately we see penetration. I don't know what ended up in penetration of my stuff, if any, or maybe he was just looking for validation before he went public. I don't know. It's hard to say. But at any rate, he was really didn't tell me much.
So what we're hearing,
I got it all through my remote viewing.
Yeah. All right, Bill Burns, what we're hearing, we're hearing a two remote viewers who have worked in the government's Stargate remote viewing program, one Paul Smith, now an accomplished author, all right, reading the enemy's mind. Two remote viewers, one who trained one, have seen structures on the moon. Back this up with what you say about astronauts viewing things and some of these very weird photos, Bill, that we've seen, things that Richard C. Hoagland has pointed out to us. What does this tell you, Bill Burns, about what's there?
It leads me to believe, as George Leonard wrote, there's something going on the moon that we don't know about, and or our government knows about, and folks the two of us are not going to know about. And it's basically this: that either there was a civilization on the moon now long gone, or whether and if Paul could travel into the future, if Ingo could travel into the future, Ingo and Paul could travel into the past. So that's something. There may be a residual kind of element there on the moon, or even, I think, more exciting. Let's say, I mean, we know that Paul traveled into the future to remote view the start. That's documented. Paul has another great story about remote viewing what looks like a UFO landing on the moon Titan, which turns out to be ours, which is a great story to tell. But that was in our interview. But what if Paul and Ingo were traveling into the future? I leave this open to Paul, and basically what he saw, what they saw, was a civilization on the moon, us. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think the moon, there's more to the moon than simply a cold, dead satellite orbiting around the Earth. I think there's much more to the moon. The fact that there's stories about the moon ringing like a bell when we fired a probe into it, the fact that the moon probably on the inside is warmer than we think it is, the fact that there have been all these spurious, I don't know what these radio transmissions mean, but these NASA radio transmissions, not just talking about structures on the moon. That was one of the first flybys of the dark side of the moon, when one of the astronauts said, "Hey, somebody's been here before us," and the person is looking down, and that was one transmission. Another transmission from the lunar surface was I forget which Apollo mission it was, where they said they were driving along a highway on the moon, that there was a road on the moon. And finally, there was a transmission where one of the astronauts said, "Hey, somebody's firing at us." And and they basically fled back to the capsule because they were being fired upon. I have these weird feelings that indeed something's going on up there, and that even photographs, you're right, Richard has published photographs, other people have published photographs of strange-looking objects on the moon that don't look like they're naturally created structures. They look like they're artificial.
And they're cylinders. They look like glass.
That's
just
right.
Weird.
The shard is one, right? What is that? And I just think indeed the moon either has been inhabited or is inhabited now, and that there is some kind of a civilization there. And I just remember, again, going back to Corso, saying that one of the rationales for fortifying the moon that the Army wanted to do, and folks can get Project Horizon, it's on the web, it's available, there's nothing now classified about it, it's in the back of Day After Roswell, but you can get it on the web, that in Project Horizon, one of the things that really piqued Lieutenant General Trudeau's interest was the fact that there was something on the moon that we had to find out. And Trudeau didn't just say send some astronauts up there. He said form an entirely new army command, the various different commands, Signal Corps, artillery, etc. Get them on the moon, establish a fortification so that the Chinese and the Russians have to storm the moon if they wanted to colonize it. But also there was something else there to establish a reason to establish a moon base.
Well, I tell you, I think Jules Verne might have been a remote viewer, because in his book, From the Earth to the Moon, he talks about how ancient Earthlings had basically from the 1800s, in his story, had gone to the moon. I'm beginning to think maybe we were already there, Bill and Paul.
It's, of course, always possible. You can't rule it out.
Well, Paul, how did you know the structures you were viewing were artificial? That always piqued me when you told that story.
Well, you just have a sense for these things. First of all, you're getting right angles. You're getting smooth, non-irregular materials that you would expect normally in some kind of geological or whatever we call it on the moon formation. Enclosing spaces in an intentional kind of a way, you get the feel for something that's an intentional artifact. So these were apparently, at least the perceptions I was getting, and remember, I'm always careful when I say, I don't say they were there, I say I was getting impressions that led me to believe they were there.
Now, you also remote viewed an object landing or floating into the atmosphere on the Saturnian moon Titan, right?
I got the impression of some kind of capsule or something, yes. I think that was the word I even used long ago.
This was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Could have been us.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, we're out of time. Your websites, which one? You've got a couple of them. Which ones do you recommend? All of them?
Well, there's my standard one, rviewer.com, but I'm going to actually be on again with you in a month.
Yes.
Talking about some new, exciting ESP breakthroughs. And that some of that material you can find on learndowsing.com. Anybody who might be interested in that can go to learndowsing.com. And, of course, there's also the nonprofit that I'm the president of, so I have an obligation to mention that. And that's the International Remote Viewing Association that anyone can become a member of. And its website is irva.org.
Great. Thanks, Paul. Up next, psychic Uri Geller, along with Bill Burns on Coast to Coast AM.